Okay, this is joint work with Josh Fenelo, Doug Jones, Eric Lazarus, Mark Linderman. I'm sorry, David's not a, I'm, what I was thinking, you were, we've talked so much about it, that's why. Forgive me. What's new in, what are the new ideas here? So what we're proposing is a way to audit that has a big chance of correcting the outcome if the outcome is wrong, that is, it's a risk-limiting audit. It enables the public to have strong evidence that the outcome is right without having to trust a lot of other people. So this has to do with the sort of attack team size things with, in relation to audits, at least. It preserves voter privacy, and it's efficient, affordable, and currently feasible. Now, there are caveats on some of those last things, and I'll talk about some of the difficulties. what's the motivation? So risk-limiting audits are now widely considered best practice. Auditing individual ballots is sort of the most efficient way to go about it, if you can go about it. If you audit individual ballots, that tends to increase the transparency of the audit, and I'll explain briefly why I think that's the case, why we think that's the case. For an observer to sit and watch several teams of four people trying to count stacks of 1,000 ballots is a very difficult thing to actually pay attention to and tell whether they're doing it right. In comparison, for somebody to hold up a ballot and say, this is the cast vote record, this is the ballot, do they agree? And do that even a few hundred times is a relatively easy thing to see. People actually can observe it as a practical matter. So it's a lot more transparent as a way of doing auditing. Simultaneously auditing all the contests on each ballot that gets selected for audit can increase the efficiency just because you have to touch fewer pieces of paper. There are some trade-offs in that, which I'm not going to get into, but it can be helpful. The problem is that publishing data at the ballot level can compromise voter privacy. So if we were to publish images of the ballots or cast vote records for every ballot separately, then pattern voting might reveal a voter's identity. Somebody could send a signal through the pattern of votes that they put down on the paper and identify themselves either accidentally or deliberately. So it's a channel of communication that we'd like to close. Problem is that if you don't publish the raw data, then the public might not trust the results of the contest or the results of the audit. So we'd like to somehow publish as much as we possibly can, but not publish so much that there's a communications channel that gets opened. So the question is there some way that we can keep the benefits of simultaneous audits at the ballot level, but have data transparency that lets individuals verify as much as possible of the outcome as they can by themselves, but not compromise voter privacy as a consequence? So end-to-end cryptographic solutions could do it. Those do require at least some changes to voting systems. They have a heavy reliance on cryptography, which we have a reliance on cryptography as well, but it's qualitatively different. And it does require sort of a critical mass of voters to actually do the check of their ballots against their receipts. So the question is there a bolt-on solution that doesn't require a lot of change to current voting systems or procedures and that relies, you know, less on mathy stuff? So, of course, mathy stuff for me is crypto. Statistics is not mathy stuff, right? All right, so a bunch of definitions. So what we mean by the audit trail of the ballot is some indelible record of how voters cast their votes. So, for example, voter mark paper ballots, VVPATs, something like that. The outcome of a contest is a set of winners. The actual vote totals don't matter from our point of view. What matters is who won. The apparent outcome is who the voting system says won. The true outcome is what a complete hand count of the audit trail would say was the set of winners. The apparent outcome is wrong if it doesn't agree with what a full hand count would say. What's a risk-limiting audit? It's an audit that has a pre-specified minimum chance of correcting the apparent outcome if the apparent outcome is wrong. So that the risk is the largest possible chance that an apparent outcome that's wrong won't get caught and corrected by the audit, no matter why it's wrong. So it could be wrong because things breaking at random, could be wrong because a machine fails, it could be wrong because somebody contrived to have the electronic record not match the paper record. So a simultaneous risk-limiting audit tries to audit more than one audit more than one contest at the same time. And limits the risk that one or more of incorrect outcomes ends up getting certified, goes uncorrected. Okay, so all of this stuff, you know, the legal standard is, do the electronic results, do the machine count results match what a full hand count of the paper trail would show? And that's somehow legalese, but kind of turfs the really important question, which is, would a full count of the paper actually show what the voters did, right? So the crucial first step that I'm really interested in focusing on going forward is, do we have a reliable audit trail in the first place? So did the election use equipment that ought to create an accurate audit trail? Did it adhere to procedures that should keep it sufficiently accurate so that it reflects the outcome according to how the voters actually voted? We should audit this, right? We should have a compliance audit. It should include ballot accounting to make sure we have the right number of pieces of paper coming back from the precinct, so forth and so on. We should be checking seals, chain of custody, surveillance tapes, so forth and so on. So if the compliance audit generates convincing affirmative evidence that a full hand count of the audit trail would show what voters did, then we can proceed to the next stage, which is the risk-limiting audit. If it doesn't generate strong enough affirmative evidence, we ought to have a revote, right? If the audit trail is sufficiently compromised, we need to start over. We have no guarantee that we got the right outcome. All right, so what's the goal of SOBA? It's to have a personally verifiable, privacy-preserving, P-resilient canvas framework. All right, so what's a canvas framework? So this is a neologism, which if anybody has a better suggestion for terminology, we'd love to hear it, or I'd love to hear it anyway. So by canvas framework, we mean the whole vote tabulation system together with the human hardware, software, procedural components, and things that are added onto it, like a compliance audit, a risk limiting audit, so forth and so on. So a canvas framework is resilient with probability P if the chance that the outcome it gives is the right outcome is at least P, even if the software has an error or shortcoming. So the idea of a resilient system is it tends to recover from faults. Okay, but this is in some sense a generalization of the Rivest-Wack idea of a strong software independence, because we tack on to that procedures that exploit that software independence to get resilience. In order to have resilience, you have to allow the possibility of a revote if you can't show that the audit trail is in good enough shape. Okay, so a canvas framework is personally verifiable and P-resilient. If it's P-resilient and a single person could, as a practical matter, observe enough of the process to be convinced that the canvas framework really is P-resilient. So we can have something that's mathematically P-resilient, but you're relying on trust of a whole bunch of people in order to show that that's true rather than being able to see it for yourself. Personally verifiable and privacy preserving means that you're not giving away, you're protecting the information that the release of which might lead to violating privacy of the voter. Okay, so neither personally verifiable nor privacy preserving is a mathematical notion. P-resilience is somehow crisp, but we could also define these things separate from P-resilience, but we haven't. All right, so what does SOBA do? It adds a special risk-limiting audit to a strongly software-independent voting system that's had a compliance audit. Okay, so we're trusting that the audit trail really is intact, and now we're going to do a special kind of risk-limiting audit that has some wrinkles that help preserve privacy while still maintaining the efficiency that comes from being able to audit at the ballot level. So we're going to publish the results ballot by ballot by contest. So we're going to disassemble the cast vote records into cast vote records on a per-contest basis. So if we're talking about a contest that has a lot of voting opportunities in it, like a large IRV contest with 18 candidates, you might still be able to signal something through your choice of how you rank people. But by having things separately for different contests, you limit the amount of information that you can convey that way. Okay. Because you've published the results by contest by ballot, anybody can add up those records to see that they match the contest sums that were reported. So you can check this record against the sums and find out whether you agree with the outcomes. The way that we're doing this, though, doesn't allow the public to reassemble whole ballot cast vote records. So you can't sort of reassemble the signal that could reveal somebody's identity. The way that we do that is to use a cryptographic commitment that allows the auditors and observers to reconstruct those ballots that are selected for audit. Not the rest of them, just the ones that are selected for audit. Okay. And the secret sauce here is that the audit simultaneously checks the accuracy of the cast vote records and the accuracy of the cryptographic commitment. It makes sure that the elections official was honest in saying, I claim this cast vote record comes from this ballot, even though that was obscured. Okay, so what's a cryptographic commitment? I'm really embarrassed to talk to this audience about it, because anybody who knows anything about this in this room knows more about it than I do. The idea is we're going to ensure that the ballot identifier is secret but indelible. So we can make sure that every ballot really is reflected in the electronic results. The way that it happens is that the elections official selects and publishes a commitment function H, and to commit that a given contest level cast vote record, CCVR, comes from a particular ballot B, the local elections official, LEO I'm using as an abbreviation, selects a secret SALT and computes that hash function applied to the ballot identifier and the SALT. And you pad the ballot identifiers to all have the same length so that, avoid some exploits. So then the election official publishes that shrouded ballot identifier, the SID Y. If the ballot is selected for audit, then the election official can reveal the SALT and the ballot identifier, and anybody can compute H of B and U and confirm whether that is, in fact, the value of Y that was disclosed before. Okay, so the key properties that the commitment function needs to have are it has to be binding or collision resistant and hiding one way. So binding is the idea that it's really difficult to come up with some other ballot ID and SALT that would give you the same hashed value. And hiding is that even if you have a list of all the hashed values and you know what all the ballot identifiers are, you can't reverse engineer it to figure out which ballot goes with which record. And you want to use a big SALT. Okay, so, all right, the story we're looking at, we have C contests in all, N sub C ballots were cast in contest C, so there's a bunch of numbers. We have capital N ballots in all, M voting opportunities in all. So what are the steps? So first you want a compliance audit. Including ballot accounting, you want to determine how many ballots were cast in each contest, how many ballots were cast in all, how many voting opportunities there were in all. So we're relying on those numbers being true, being accurate. You want to find what the apparent outcomes are of the C contests. You're going to construct the cast vote record for each ballot. This is something local election official does, perhaps by using a parallel scan. Assign a unique identifier to each ballot and a unique sort of record locator, as it were. You want to know if I'm going to number ballot number 17, I have to know that what ballot 17 means is it's the third ballot in the second batch of ballots, you know, located in a particular part of the room, right? You want something that can't be spoofed, as it were. You're going to take apart the cast vote records from the ballots into cast vote records for each contest separately, publish those in a file. Each line of the file has the cast vote record and the shrouded ID of the ballot that it came from. So that's what that line of the file will have. And you're going to want to sort it in some order so that you don't have information in the ordering, right? So that people, a sloppy implementation might do this in the same order for every one of the cast vote record files, in which case somebody could reassemble the complete ballot. All right, so then we're going to publish, the elections official publishes a ballot style file. It has one line per physical ballot, and it basically says, these are the contests that are on this ballot, this is the ballot's ID, and this is where you can go find it somewhere in my office. It does not say what the voters' choices were on the ballot. It just says, these are the contests on the ballot. And then there's a secret lookup file that the election official uses to go back and prove to everybody that this contest level cast vote record, in fact, came from this ballot. If they need to decrypt things, that's what he relies on. Okay, and then finally, the need to select and disclose what this cryptographic hash function is going to be, what risk limit you're going to use, and what pseudorandom number generator you're going to use to do part of the process. And we need to worry at some point about how good pseudorandom number generators are. All right, so what could go wrong? The contest level cast vote records might fail to be sufficiently accurate because the cast vote record actually doesn't match the ballot, either because the voter didn't follow instructions or the machine failed or you know, whatever it is. And so there's a failure in how you generate the cast vote record. It could be that the vote record doesn't really correspond to any ballot at all. So the election official screwed up and the mapping is broken, right? That's one way that things can be messed up. It could be that somebody tried to map more than one cast vote record to the same physical ballot, right? That's another way that the mapping could fail. Or there could be no cast vote record associated with some voting opportunity on a ballot, okay, or an entire ballot. Okay, so the point of SOBA is that we check all of those things while checking the accuracy. So a usual risk-limiting audit would be checking the first item. We're checking them all with the same sample, with the same audit. Okay, so here, really quickly, I've got 4 minutes left. How do you do this audit? So we're going to go through nine steps for this audit at a 10% risk level. So you want to make sure that the files have the right number of entries, right? That things are at least intact. You're going to verify that for each contest, the cast vote records show the same outcome that the elections official has announced. It doesn't really matter whether the totals match exactly. What matters is that the outcomes match. If they don't match, just jump to a hand count for that contest. And then you want to verify that these ballot identifiers are unique. You want to verify that for each contest, there's the right number of cast vote records in the ballot style file for that contest, and verify that the ballot identifiers are unique. If any of them but two fails, that needs to be corrected before you start the risk-limiting stage of the audit. Okay. All right, so now we're on to the risk-limiting stage of the audit that's going to check the accuracy of the cast vote records and also the accuracy of this cryptographic commitment. So we're going to set the audit parameters. First, you find the diluted margin. What that is basically the smallest margin in votes in any of the contests you're auditing divided by the total number of ballots that were cast. Okay, it's diluted by the total number of ballots, even if the contest only involved a smaller number of ballots. You set the initial sample size to be 7 divided by that diluted margin. 7 is the magic number. That gives you 10% risk limit, okay? Actually, you can use something a little smaller than that, but for example, if the diluted margin was 1%, your initial sample size would be 700. You'd look at 700 ballots. Okay, you select a seed S, and you could do this in various ways that involve participation of observers. They could contribute digits, people could roll dice publicly, so forth and so on. But you want a mechanical source of randomness to get going. And then we're going to use that seed in a pseudo-random number generator to generate more random numbers to select ballots. So we're going to pull N ballots, 700 in the example I was giving. You find their entries in the ballot style file. You go pull the physical piece of paper. You look at the contest-specific cast vote records. You make sure everything matches up. Okay. If they don't, if you find everything but they don't match, that's dealt with in the same way you do an ordinary risk-limiting audit. But if you fail to find a match, right? If you don't find a physical ballot that corresponds to the cast vote record, you treat it in the worst possible way, right? And if there's a voting opportunity on the ballot that isn't reflected on the ballot style file, you treat it in the worst possible way. Okay. Then, if no cast vote record in the sample overstated any margin by 2 votes, and the fraction that overstated any margin by 1 vote is at most 20% of the diluted margin, you can stop, right? And you've now limited the risk to 10% in this example. If not, you have to do a slightly more complicated calculation, but it really just involves multiplication and subtraction. It's not terribly hard to do. And then at that point, if that number is less than 10%, you can stop. If not, you audit one ballot at a time until that number gets small enough. If you get bored, you can jump to the end and just count the rest of the ballots by hand, or you can have more elaborate rules for dealing with it. Okay, so my time is out. I've got 1 minute left. Okay, so what are we missing? What do we really need to be able to do this well? We need methods for extracting cast vote records quickly and reliably from the paper, and I'll talk a little bit more about this afternoon. We need ways to audit that there's the declared number of ballots cast in each contest. And this is a hard thing. I have some ideas on how to go about doing that. We need good ways of explaining this stuff to other people so that people will, in fact, trust it. So we need some public relations. We need best practices for creating and curating the audit trail, right, and for conducting compliance audits. And I think that right now, the fact that we're missing standards for this sort of thing, missing regulation, is really important. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. We have time for maybe one or two questions. So I just want to add, in terms of your public relations, I think one way to put it based on this work is that this is the way to do your hand count audit of your of your electronic records. This just seems like the the way to do it while preserving privacy. I think it's a very good advance. So, does
Jeremy Epstein, SRI International. As you were giving your talk, I got an email from a friend of mine who's a high school math teacher and looking for volunteers to talk to high school students to address the question, why should I care about math? What's it good for anyway in the real world? So I guess...
Picking up chicks.
Whether those students are guys or chicks. So I guess my question is there a way that this could be explained, do you think, to a high school student? I didn't see anything that seemed to me that would preclude it, but then again, I haven't been a high school student in a long time.
I think it's harder to explain it to election integrity advocate whose mind is already made up than to a high school student who doesn't have preconceptions. Which doesn't mean it's feasible, but anyway, there's an upper bound.
that needs a response. I was present at Monterey when you did the single ballot, which was done very well and, you know, with the utmost integrity. And I talked to the Green Party representative. I mean, remember, we're trying to trust the losers, you know, and the voters in that community. I talked to that Green Party guy afterwards, and as you know, both during the single ballot audit, the two of us asked a million questions, and you were the epitome of patience and clarity. So, you know, I applaud
Good
you for
questions.
That. I talked to him afterwards. Well, what did you think? He was absolutely clueless, he sort of understood it while you were explaining to it. You know, he was rolling his eyes a couple of times. The assistant ROV made clear this was over his head. He didn't know what was going on. And I asked the Green Party guy, who I'd never met before, well, you know, tell me in your own words what happened, what did Phil, you know, and he was clueless. So that transparency part of it is a challenge. What I do really like about this is that you've separated you're doing the single ballot. That's good. So while I can't say my mind is closed, it's starting to, I'm convinced by this, but my opinion doesn't matter. It's the candidate, the losing candidates, and the citizens in the counties where this takes place. Mm-hmm. Those are the folks you have to convince. And in Humboldt County, the aftermath of that, the people trusted the election official who made a mistake in public and said, oh my God, I made a mistake, come and see how I fix it, and everybody. Those kind of intangible things, you know, the human factor, that's absolutely critical to looking at the whole trustworthy system. So I just wanted to...
Thank you.
You're here. All right, well, thank you. Lunch is going to be served now, and we'll reconvene at 1:40. Thank you.